The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
As soon as we think you can give me the thing I can't give myself, we start to lose agency over ourselves. I want everyone that I work with to feel empowered, that they've already got the ability to begin to define their lives, but with some support of a group and some guidance here and there that will come further than if I give you the belief that you'll be able to achieve something because I tell you that I can solve that for you.
It's a wonderful chaos. Two, three, random. Messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest and fight to find peace. Both head and the heart.
I can let you and me.
So what are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way.
Today, Bambos and I
will be discussing mentoring and coaching.
So coaching and mentoring, which for me, it's funny because, you know, I always told you there's about 10 show themes that I wanted to touch on. And one of them was coaching versus mentoring. And that was important for me because, you know, when I started to create a distinction and want to really understand it was after my mentor Case died. And what happened after he died was we were very...
He was your mentor.
He was my mentor. Case was my mentor for 10 years. And we shared the same principles. So principles of understanding if you behave in a certain way, you can expect certain outcomes, right? There is a certain... You live by certain principles. You adopt them over time. And you see by living by a certain principle that you sort of understand, oh, this is what happens. It happens over time normally when you start living a principle. It's not immediate because you don't understand what it feels like to live a principle until afterwards you see the outcome.
Yeah.
So principle for me, for example, for those listening would be I have a very clear principle, which is relationship first. I live, you know, in a way people don't like. Today I give you an example. I had a call with someone that I rent an apartment to and I rent him, so I'm his renter, right, landlord. But I also consider him a dear friend. I barely know him. I just love him. And he said he was going to move out. And I thought to myself, he never really told me why he was moving out. And so I called him today. I said, listen, I just want to make sure, because we never discussed it, was money an issue for you? Because if money was an issue, then I should hope you'd bring that forward to me and we'd try to figure out how to make it work. And he said, Andy, we're such good friends. I didn't want to introduce it into a relationship. Like, I like you so much. And he even said it was hard for us to leave because you as a landlord was just something that we really appreciated. And I laughed and said, yeah, because of that reason, I would have loved if you brought it forward to me. Because for me, it's always going to be about us and our relationship. So, you know, we had a bit of a laugh, but we became closer through that interaction. And that's sort of how I live. I breathe it. And it's so important to me.
Are they staying?
They're not staying because he already booked it. If we discussed it earlier, they would have stayed. He laughed afterwards and said, this is a learning. But regardless, it brought us closer again. And that's what I'm looking for in my life is how do we, even when it might not necessarily appear to be in both of our interests, how do we come together still and have a discussion? So that's an example of a functioning principle I use. What I wanted to get to, so Case and I shared a lot of these principles, but we were very different in how we executed them. So when he would interact with someone on a kind of a coaching mentoring basis, or I would interact with them, we'd somehow pull from the same well of understanding, but we'd execute it differently when we would interact with our clients.
Would that have to do with the intention?
It would not necessarily have to do with the intention. It also would often have to do with our predisposition.
What does that mean?
So you learn something.
Yeah.
But when you learn it, you will execute it differently than how anyone else would execute it.
Yeah.
So we all learn, you know, and then, you know, we've had some discussions with people who go, they go to coaches or mentors, and then they learn a lot, and then they start to imitate that coach or the mentor when they first get clients, because they don't have any other basis to they'll even take their tools and they'll adopt them.
Yeah.
But the thing is they'll adopt it in a way that suits how they tend to work.
Yeah. Okay.
So in my case, I saw that I was different than my mentor case, but I didn't know how. And it didn't feel good not to understand the difference for me.
So back then you couldn't articulate?
No. Okay. So, and after he died, I spent some time thinking, like, who am I going to be now? How am I going to coach? And I really wanted to understand, and not because I needed to understand why I was, say, special, forget that, but what is it that makes me behave differently than he? And how is it that if you behave differently, you have a different outcome that can occur? So it's not good or bad. It's more like if someone works more like a coach or they work more like a mentor, what's the behavior you could expect from that person? And then in that behavior, where is it more suitable for a certain audience? Because a lot of people will throw out the word coach. I'm a coach. And then you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? And then everyone has their own definition. Why do you laugh?
Because nowadays everyone and their dog and their cat is a coach.
Yeah. But I mean, when it comes to mentoring, that also has its own ideas.
But I rarely hear people say I'm a mentor. They say I'm a coach.
Well, I think what often happens is mentoring is something I've heard spoken more about in a corporate environment where they say, who's going to be your mentor within an organization? Like, who's going to help you grow and understand kind of politics and system dynamics and all that kind of stuff? So as I started to evolve and started to think, like I mentioned, after Case died, I realized that there was sort of a matrix I built in my head. And I built the matrix, as I do with a lot of things. I work in paradox theory, which is basically there are two things which appear to be contradictory when in fact they're complementary. And normally when you work with a paradox, there's a gentle trait and a dynamic trait, also called an aggressive trait. And I saw that coaching and mentoring were actually complementary things. Hmm. And coaching, as I define it, everyone can define it however they do. I saw it far more related to a skill, which is a skill that can be learned. Anyone can actually do it if they just want to learn the system dynamics of it. And it all is around questions. In the coaching dynamic, one assumes that the other can figure it out for themselves if they're asked the right questions.
And I'm going to assume right now that only when the person receiving the coaching asks a question, do you ask them another question or do you give them an answer?
Okay, that's a good. You're asking a bigger question.
Yeah.
And what I would say to answer your question, I'm assuming in a coaching that there's been a dynamic that's already been decided. Yeah. There's a coach and then there's a coachee. So once that has been established, the coach has the right to ask the questions.
Yeah.
What you've said, and which I would love to talk on, what is when an individual has not been asked to be a coach, but they think that they should be a coach?
That's not what I asked.
It isn't, but it's a good thing to state at least.
Okay.
Because that could imply some level of arrogance. When someone believes that they know what's best for you and they start coaching you where it hasn't been asked for, there is some degree of arrogance there because what it presumes.
And are they coaching you with that same formula, just asking you questions?
I mean, it could be.
Because normally the way you're talking about it, I have the image of someone knowing what's best for you. So the questions are more directive towards the outcome that they want.
Okay. But that's the, so now you, now we're taking coaching and now you're saying, Andy, the coach themselves, how capable are they? Cause that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
And the capacity of the coach, I would suggest, this is how I would see it, is the coach's ability to facilitate you through your own thinking processes in order to get clarity.
Yeah.
Now, what I heard you say, or what I interpreted you having said, is when the coach has an idea of what the right answer is, and through their questions, they reveal that they're guiding you in a certain direction, as opposed to facilitating your own thinking processes.
And being really free of the idea of what they have it should be for you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In a coaching thing, I mean, you could, in some cases, go to sleep. Like, I could ask you four questions that I already know I'm going to ask you right now, not even knowing what you're going to say. And I already know what those four questions are going to be. You want to play the game?
Sure. Let's play the game.
Okay. So, Bambos, tell me.
Can I just ask one more thing?
Yeah.
Then is it right to say that the person that's asking the questions with an intention of trying to get you somewhere, and just for context, let's just call that a bit manipulative.
Yeah. Okay.
Would you call that person a coach?
Or are yes, of course they're a coach. And let's also not judge it for a moment, because that coaching style may suit a certain person. But let's also agree that if that's the only tool they have in their toolkit,
yeah,
then they're limited. Because let's assume, let's agree for one moment, maybe at that very moment for that client, the best way to help them is to manipulate them.
Well, working with you, how many years now? 7 years?
Yeah.
I mean, you've been mentoring me, right?
Sure.
And coaching. And I've seen you also giving me guiding questions, like not asking me questions, just telling me what to do.
Sure. Yeah.
And I would never actually say that you've been manipulative, because I always...
You saw the intention.
The intention, yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes I may have been manipulative, but my intentions were good.
You dick.
Yeah. Like what makes you think that getting up at 3 o'clock every morning is the best thing?
4:30, Andy, 4:30.
I'm just making shit up. What makes you think that getting up at 4:30 every single morning, even when you're exhausted, is the best thing to do?
Have you tried it?
Okay. No. But you, great question in return, by the way. But you heard in my question, it wasn't a question.
It was a judgment.
It was a judgment.
Yeah.
And so that's getting to your point, is the coach themselves capable of seeing through their own shadow, which is the word is often used for that.
Yeah.
So, Bambos, tell me an area.
And then you get the answer you got.
Exactly. Because people are triggered by the quiet non-statement, the judgment they hear.
So ask it differently?
Well, I wouldn't ask that, because that isn't the issue that I'd like to engage with you. What's something in your life at the moment where you see that it's not bringing you joy, or you feel like if it changed, you'd get, things would be working better in your life?
It's love and finances that I'm busy with.
Love and finances.
Yeah, both.
Okay, so from those two, which one would be something that you say, I'm more triggered by that at this moment than the other?
Equal.
Okay, so let's take love. So what is it about love at the moment that's not working for you?
The conditions out there are not there to actually nurture that.
And when you use the word conditions, what does that actually mean?
COVID.
And yeah. How is COVID then impacting that for you?
Well, I think you know that I don't have a problem going out and talking to random people. So in this case, women, but it's because of the fear that's there, I do find it more challenging to engage, but also from my side, because say I meet someone and I like them, it doesn't mean that I want to invite them in my life, because I am still social distancing in a way.
And you use the word fear. What do you mean by fear?
Of starting something that I can't dive deep into right now, because actually I haven't met anyone besides you and Ronnie, who are actually taking the COVID thing seriously.
Okay.
And Benoit, actually, who is having cancer.
Yeah.
Recovery.
And
so unless people have a life and death, so in that way, I don't feel the trust. So I can meet people, but yeah, like even if I start talking about it, I feel that there might be even a judgment from my side.
And what's the judgment?
That here in the Netherlands, we haven't taken COVID seriously. And the consequences are we're getting to a lockdown. And we talked about it already. In March already, we said that this will be happening and it's happening. Mm-hmm. So.
And what does it mean for you that this is happening?
I can tell you how I feel when I walk on the streets. I feel lonely.
Mm-hmm.
It feels lonely to walk on the streets of Amsterdam, going to the market and seeing clusters of people as if nothing is happening. And it's part of me is like, I want that too.
Mm.
And apparently I can't give that to myself right now.
From why do you say apparently?
Oh, isn't that obvious?
No, I mean, because maybe for some it wouldn't be an issue, but apparently for you it is. So
I have the belief that if I get COVID, my body could pretty much kick it out of its system pretty quickly.
Okay.
Or I can carry it, and since we're working so closely, you'll get it.
Okay.
So.
And if I were to die of COVID because of you, then you would.
Oh, man, fuck that. Like, if I made the choice to socialize, this show would not go on anymore because I wouldn't do that.
So what you're saying is that you're not socializing, you're not giving yourself the affection maybe that you'd want because you're frightened that through that you might give me COVID and that you'd lose that.
Yeah.
Okay. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah.
Okay. So now this was an exercise. Even when I ask you the questions, you could sort of see I was dispassionate. I didn't ask the questions like emotionally attached to them. I really just asked questions.
They were quite dry. And I didn't feel that you were trying to take me somewhere.
No, because so the coaching, the technique that I was just exhibiting, which is called, first of all, it's an opening question. Like a coach would usually, if they're good, the opening question would be, they set a context for the discussion, which is just big enough and small enough. Like the biggest question would be something like, what's going on in your life? You know, it would be so broad that you don't even have any place to start. And my question was a little bit more specific. Where's an area that you're either struggling or you'd like to improve? So that's the context setting.
And I feel the word deepening comes up.
Exactly. And then all you saw me do for the next five questions, I even wrote the words down. I will listen as a coach, right, to a word that you'll state that has either a vagueness to it or judgment to it. Hmm. And then I'll deepen by asking another question. So when you said the conditions aren't there, I'd say, what do you mean conditions? What does that mean for you? Or you'd say, I feel fear come up. And I'll say, what's the fear? You say, I have judgment towards that. What's the judgment?
Yeah.
So as a coach of just facilitating you, I'll take ideas or thoughts that you have in your head that haven't necessarily been worked out because they're just general. They're like an attachment of a lot of ideas with no single thought having been deepened and getting real clarity around it. And then I'll ask you to deepen your feelings around that.
I do get emotional. I do feel the emotion of what we shared or what I shared.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, because we're talking also, it's like, oh, I'm also feeling all this.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a moment to, to do the demonstration is obviously one thing. To have the experience for you is not separate from that. So let's not pretend like these two things are not also connected. Yeah. So
Go on.
Yeah. So in my deepening of this for you, you can hear that not for me per se, but for you, you get clear on your thoughts.
I was already clear with my thoughts. I would say that you gave me access to the emotion, or I got more embodied.
And that's what I'm talking about. When I say clear, I don't mean clear logically. I mean more embodied in the feelings that are underneath your thoughts. Yeah. Thank you for making that clarification, because you're right. If people thought clarity was an idea like, oh, I understand it better. No, you embody what's really going on in yourself more.
Bulelang, where are you?
Yeah, where's his comment?
JC, where are you?
JC's in the car in Alabama, so he won't be commenting today. And then what you'll notice, what I did, I skipped a step, which I may also take in a coaching call. But so all of what I did, I didn't need to know anything about you, about your situation, about ways to deal with loneliness. Like, all I did was use basically two techniques, two skills. One, framing a question to begin a discussion, and then deepening questions step by step as you answered them.
So the thing you didn't do was a conclusion.
Well, what you noticed, and this is what word terminology in general would be, is I summarized what I heard you say, but you didn't say maybe directly. So what you did say was, Andy, I'm worried that I might get you sick if I interact with women. So you never made the direct connection like, I'm feeling uncomfortable engaging with people outside because I'm worried that in some ways I might get you sick and I couldn't live with that. Like, that's what you said, but you didn't say it.
Yeah.
So by me making it explicit.
I didn't want to say it. Like, I know that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But somehow acknowledging that is also difficult for me.
Agreed. And that's why as a coach, the ability to summarize the thing that's said but not outspoken, let's say, because I heard what you said, even if you didn't say it that as specifically as that.
Yeah.
So to summarize it gives you an opportunity. It's almost like, so if I'm here's the words I wrote down just as you spoke.
Conditions,
fear, judgment. There's another word in there as well. Basically, it's almost like if I was an artist, you would be speaking and then I'd be drawing this picture as you're speaking, as I'm doing right now. And then you speak everything and I say, oh, you know what? Here is the thing I see. And it's almost like it's half a picture, half a mirror.
So in your summary, you're not bleeding your own interpretation. It's really a summary. Or is there interpretation in there?
There has to be some level of interpretation for sure. And sometimes you might even take some risks. So the summary I said.
So when you said what I heard you say, when you would phrase it like that, it means that you're giving back to what you heard me say.
Yeah.
So how would you start that? So it's not what I heard you say, it is.
So what you're saying is, you can make it as a statement.
Okay.
So what you're saying is you're not seeing other people because you're worried that it might get me sick. But you could take it one step further because I could make five different summaries. Let's try a few just to give you a sense of it. So, and remember, a summary is not trying to get it right. You're not trying to get it right. Like, that's not the point. The point is you're trying to create a mirror so the other person can look into themselves to see where it's true. So it's not even bad to take a few risks.
It's really beautiful how you articulate. Go on.
I often like to say it's like a bungee jump. So I'm going to make up a few more summaries to the exact same thing we just went through. So what I'm hearing, Bambos, is that you're actually living in fear of my life. Yeah. So that would be another summary, which is a little bit more confronting, that pushes a person to feel deeper into what they might be avoiding.
Yeah.
So the first version was softer. That was the next version. The beautiful thing with the summary is you don't need to get it right. Because let's just say right now, you said, no, I don't agree with that, right?
Yeah.
What do you think the next question I have for you is? Because it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. Actually, it's not the point. The next question would be, what do you see then?
So you invite me to...
Yeah, then you say, let's just try it. So what I see, Bambos, is although you might not feel that you live a life in fear, you know, you actually do have a lot of fear in your system.
I would say you're partially right. I know that I'm living with a lot of fear.
Okay, and where does that show up in your life?
Like the example we just talked about.
Okay. So, and what is that? See, you see what I'll do is the question will always deepen. Again, I did a summary. Summary was shit. You said, okay, that doesn't match my experience. And then I say, okay, well, help me understand what am I missing? So even as a coach, you don't even need to be good at summaries because as long as there's trust, there has to be trust. Let's agree on that. But assuming trust, you can just continue asking, what did I miss? And then the other person will fill in all the gaps. So coaching really does not require any understanding of a situation. It's situation independent, potentially.
Clear.
Yeah.
And then what would be the dynamic between a mentor and a person being mentored?
Okay, so now we move from, but let's, I wanted to kind of sort of, if we're doing sort of a, like the gentle, what I often will equate with coaching, the gentle trait, then we move to mentoring, which might be the dynamic, which I would consider more of a dynamic trait. And the mentor, right, as a character, as what their capacity or capability is crystallizing an understanding that they have built into principles. A principle understanding of how things work.
Yeah.
So if you have a principle understanding of how things work, then you don't need necessarily to coach people. In your and mine relationship, you know, I've just said, Bambos, do it that way. And in my experience, it works. And you might do it, and it may or may not work. But in some ways, you're basing your actions on principles that I've developed for myself.
Yeah.
So I'm at that moment. I'm not coaching you. I'm mentoring you. You know, there's situations when it's come to you. We discussed pricing in your past, how you deal with customers in your past. And when you'll come to me with those questions, I'll always answer you with the principle that you aren't following at that moment. I never coach you. I say, you're not following the principle. You know which principles they are? Which ones? Like, I know like three of them I've coached you on in the past, not necessarily now. What's a principle that you know immediately? Like, oh yeah, that's a principle that Andy always lives by, and he always tells me when I don't live by it.
Relationship first.
Relationship first, that's one of them. But what's another one? There's tons of them that you probably implicitly know if I name them for you. Like, oh yeah, I know that. But you don't I have them so clear in my mind that I even state them outright. That's a fundamental principle of how I work.
I probably embody them, but I don't.
I don't give away value unless my value is recognized. And if it's not recognized, then it's not appreciated. People become resentful afterwards if I ask for that value to be recognized because I didn't ask for it up front. How many times have we had that kind of discussion in your past?
A lot of times.
Okay, but that's a principle. That's a functioning principle. So when you have a principle like that and you have a mentor that says, don't give away anything for free unless you have a clear recognition that the value will also be valued. And that's just a running principle. And that a mentor can give you a principle like that, which you may not have learned for yourself if you're open to them mentoring you there. Yeah. And then you start adopting it in your own life. You say, oh, shit, things get easier and better when I apply that principle to my clients. Yeah. I can think, I'm trying to think of three or four other principles because there are principles that I know we've interacted with where I've just bang, that's how it is, Bambos. Very direct, not, hey, Bambos, what makes you, you know, what makes this or what makes that? It's often happened around clients, difficult clients where sometimes you've not necessarily felt comfortable engaging them, and I've always sort of given you a clear answer, like this is how you would, this is how you'd react to that or respond to that.
Yeah.
I think one was a relationship first, when we even discussed a client who you offered something to, they didn't show up for it. You rearranged it. They didn't show up for the following thing. I'm speaking generalities now.
Yeah.
And then you said, well, I don't want to refund them the money because they didn't follow through with two promises they made. And now it shouldn't be my burden now to refund the money on the thing that they didn't fulfill.
Oh, yeah. So in the end, I refunded based on keeping it clean. Because if you let a client walk away feeling, they're gonna be what's the word? They're gonna carry the.
They're gonna write you a bad review, and they're gonna say, "Listen, don't go to this guy because he basically will rip you off."
Yeah,
and one review like that will lose you 5 new clients, and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
So that's sort of an understanding of relationship first. If you're not happy, I'm not happy. If they're abusive, it's different, right? And I wouldn't accept abuse. That's not what we're talking about here. The fact that they're not responsible.
It's just keeping it really clean.
It's keeping it really clean. And so that would be a functioning principle. That would be more of something a mentor does, is they'd really work clearly with principles, and they'd make them so explicit, hopefully. Some people are mentors, but they don't even know that they have clear principles because they haven't made them explicit yet. There's a lot of people that, you know, they try it. And what I've seen happen in life is that people that get more successful or maybe even not successful, they start saying, hey, these are the 5 principles you need to be successful in life. And they try to crystallize their success, not seeing that a lot of the struggle a person will have to be successful has nothing to do with understanding those principles. It has to do with overcoming limiting beliefs of themselves. So that's where it's dangerous if a mentor has this weird belief system that they have the answers to your problems, and if you just follow these 5 things, you'll be successful.
Those 5 things would work in a specific context.
Well, they may work, right? They're better than maybe not having those principles. So, but to promise that they'll solve the issue is just too much.
It actually sounds like mentoring, when you say it's dangerous, it's putting a plaster over stuff, but it's not really good.
No, I wouldn't say it's dangerous. I would say what the danger is when one takes their learning over time and has a belief, right? Because that's what happens, that their success can be given to another person if they just share that these are the 5 things that make you successful.
So it could be that they write a book, the 5 steps, and then they're not taking into account that these 5 steps work under a certain context.
Work for them. And that doesn't even take into what often is the biggest thing that no one wants to discuss. What do you think that is?
You mean the underlying root?
No, luck. Oh, yeah. A lot of times luck is a lot of what no one really wants to ever admit or acknowledge, is that luck had a lot to do with their success. Being in the right place at the right time.
What was our guest? What was his name?
Good Luck Club, Simon Squibb.
Yeah, we had a podcast with Mr. Squibb.
Yeah, we actually are going to have on a professor from the university in Innsbruck, and he's going to talk about that a monkey can invest better, as it's been tested, than an investor. If you put a monkey in a room and you say, pick whatever stocks he picks, the monkey will perform as good, if not better, than the person who picks stocks for a living. We have exceptions. We have people who create unique situations for themselves. So we can't exclude it completely. But I'm suggesting that when one says this is how to be successful, it doesn't take into account all the other factors that came to make them successful. What it takes into account is the 5 things that they thought were important that they believe would help others, where actually it's a belief. That's what I'm saying. It's just like a religion. Now, but they've convinced themselves of it. And if they have a lot of charisma, they'll attract people to them, which is what happens. You know, I can put that character on right now and make people on the other side say, wow, I'm attracted to that kind of persona. And it's kind of scary if you just put on the mask of that persona that immediately people can lose some agency because they think, oh, wow, that's attractive. I mean, let's just play the game right now.
Guru Andy?
Well, no, it wouldn't be a guru. It would be like kind of the strong-minded, believes in himself and believes that he can convince other people of things that would make their lives better or more successful.
Go on.
Okay. Okay. If you've been struggling financially, it usually comes down to three limiting beliefs. If you're able to overcome those three limiting beliefs, I guarantee you that you will be able to find success in your life. I know a lot of people out there, they talk about promises of what to achieve, how to achieve it. This is totally different. These three simple steps, if done with me together, you will find will dramatically shift your financial future. So trust me, your money back. If you don't find within the first month that you've drastically shifted how you're thinking and feeling and working with money, then I will give you your money back. But that won't be the case because I guarantee you that it'll work. I don't know. I mean, that's the voice, right? I mean, that's the persona.
I would have done something differently.
Okay, go ahead. Try it.
No, I would have wanted you to look into the camera.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, but not perfect. This is I've never done it before, actually. But that's the voice, which people lose part of their agency. They give it over. And I may very well believe the things I'm saying. I don't necessarily even think that I'm oblivious. But what I'm not taking into account are the specifics to the individual and the fact that they have so many unique differences that I can't necessarily accommodate those in my three beliefs. Because I'm a white privileged male who basically was given this higher level of opportunity that they weren't given, for instance. And I've said, hey, follow these three things and you'll be more successful. Well, that's not true. It was true for me in my reverse engineering of my own story, because that might not have even been the three most important things. Those are just the things that I began to believe were the most important. And that's how we've gone a little bit off kilter here. But that is at least what I'm suggesting, is that we create a framework, we believe that framework, and then we talk about it convincingly. And by talking about it convincingly, we can attract people who don't necessarily have that confidence. And they think, oh, that person, I want the same confidence they have.
It worked for me.
Yeah. And then we get the testimonials. But we're mixing things. So I'd like to just to clarify, if we go back to the quintessential mentor, the quintessential mentor will state the principle and then make sure that when there's deviations in the person that they're mentoring, hey, you're not following the principle. Hey, you're not following the principle. So there's a lot more telling in that engagement. Why aren't you following the principle? There's no real question there. There's no coaching. There's just a direct mentoring. So if we think about it, coaching is about inquiry and mentoring is about teaching. Mm. And that's really the two kind of polarities. And funnily enough, and you know how I am, I don't want to see one or the other. I also see that you can simultaneously mentor and coach as a state. And that would be asking questions, but it would be asking questions with the understanding that there's a reason that you ask a question. Because I might say to you, Bambos, you're doing it wrong. And you'll say, I'm mentoring you at that moment. Hey, Bambos, you're doing it wrong. Okay, well, what should I do? Well, do it the way I told you to do it. Mm. So that is a mentoring engagement, but that doesn't necessarily help you embody it. So a good mentor also knows how to balance the mentoring with the coaching. And so it would be something like, hey, Bambos, I've mentioned this to you two or three times already. What makes that you haven't started using or adopting this in your life?
Yeah.
And that's where you combine mentoring and coaching. Because the mentor knows that if it comes from my mouth, the likelihood that it'll be done by the other is low. So the other person has to state it in order for you to trust at all that it'll actually actually shift. That's an understanding. That's a principle understanding of mentoring. But some mentors wouldn't have that understanding. So they'd state it and think, just because I've stated it, it's enough. Yeah. I like this, that Bola Long, his, when I did my sales pitch, he says, I don't like people making such promises. Bola Long,
that doesn't surprise us.
I was going to say, that does not surprise us at all. I don't think any of us like that, those promises. It's scary. And I also watch people make those promises, and I think how scary it is that people fall for it. And I know why they fall for it. It's because they have a deep need that's not being met. And the person presenting it to them gives them a feeling that it can be solved. And that's how life works. If we can't find peace in ourselves, we look outside of ourselves to see who can do it or help us do it. And then Bolong also shares, there are also people who have qualities that they are good at, but they don't even know. They just see themselves succeeding. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. A lot of people that I think are the most, successful at implementing certain principles, so they wouldn't even know where to begin to mentor somebody else. You know that term, consciously competent, unconsciously competent?
No.
There's a term that often used. I don't know if that's the word. It's when individuals are unconscious, but they're exhibiting the behavior, which is, for instance, successful in creating opportunity or whatever the business is they're trying to do.
Yeah.
So they're exhibiting unconscious competence.
Oh, yeah.
They just do it by nature, but they don't know what they're actually doing. And there's some that are competently conscious, which is that they know what they're doing and they're doing it. And I think, as Bola Long just alluded to, if you're consciously competent, it's clearly easier for you to mentor somebody else, because you don't say, it doesn't feel good what you're doing. You give them actually more of a hook. Like when I say Bambos, relationship first, that's the principle. And then I can express what that actually means. That would be consciously competent. And yet somebody else would say, Andy, that's a terrible principle. And I would say, maybe so. What do you see? So just because I've adopted a principle doesn't mean that it's best or right. It's just a way I've chosen to live to guide my decision-making processes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Unconsciously incompetent. Yeah.
Hey, Diana.
Yeah, that's beautiful. The unconsciously incompetent. Yeah, because there's the four quadrants again on this one. But someone who's not conscious, unconscious and incompetent is often the most dangerous person, because they don't even know that they're incompetent, which makes them a huge liability.
Yeah, I can see.
Yeah. And then that would be a person who, if you're in an organizational structure, you'd either get them a coach, right? Or you'd get them a mentor. But usually you're going to find a coach and a mentor, it would be, you get a coach for somebody who's not getting along with others. That would be traditionally what a coach's role would be. And you'd get a mentor for somebody you see with high potential, that where they, someone who can guide them into roles that are above what they're currently doing. So those would tend to be roles and how they would fill in different, in a business context or something like that. Anything comes up for you as we talk, questions or things?
Well, I think we met in end of 2014 or mid 2014 when as most of you know, I'm a photographer, started my business from scratch, learned everything on YouTube, and I didn't really have anyone to support me.
Mm-hmm.
And I came to the end of the rope. Like, I ran out of money. I was eating leftovers from the organic market, just picking scraps up from the ground. And back then, I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. And I couldn't really see where I was going. And then a mutual friend of ours, Caspar Declare,
mm-hmm.
who was in your life back then,
yeah,
he was probably the only person I was talking to, and he connected us.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Andy mentored me was, okay, what's going on? Where are you at? And what's your plan? And then we would have like little mini brainstorming sessions in the kitchen, but pretty much try this. And then I go out for how many weeks and just try things out. And there were days where I would be trying things out. And if you've done that every day for several weeks, it can really get to you. And I would just call Andy and just let it out and cry and keep going. Mm-hmm. So that was really supportive back then.
Yeah. So that would have been me more acting as a coach than a mentor at those moments.
Yeah.
If we take the roles that we've defined here.
Yeah. No. Deanna de Brown is asking, not sure if you mentioned it before, but do you then call yourself a coach or a mentor or both?
It's interesting. I actually don't like to call myself anything. Because at the end, I always have the feeling, like the only reason why I call myself something is that other people need a category in order to make sense of your life.
Yeah.
So if I had my choice, I would say I'm nothing. And then I interact and things evolve and I help and solve and I help and support and it changes and adapts so quickly. I don't even know. But I normally call myself an advisor. Like that's the term I often use. I'm an advisor.
Corporate advisor.
I'm just an advisor. That's what the word I use.
Hey, but if you're in the corporate world, that's what you would say.
Yeah, but I wouldn't necessarily categorize it as advisor. Like I advise family offices. I advise individuals. I advise that's generally how I would categorize it. But what is advising? It's just a mix of coaching and mentoring.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, if you're in a...
And you have to be a great listener for that.
What'd you say?
A great listener and a great empath.
Yeah. I mean, and if you can apply that and you give principles, again, as an advisor that help people understand what are better decisions they could make, then you become valuable to others. And a principle isn't a belief, right? A principle is not like, I believe this. A principle is, this is what I've done. This is why it hasn't worked in the past. This is why it may work in the future, but we can never be sure. So it's really, it's like you develop a working hypothesis that changes always. So Diana, I would say I work more, if I was to answer the question directly, I work more like a mentor than a coach, but it doesn't mean that I don't also apply tools that a coach would apply. Yeah. For those of you who would like to visualize this, since this is also a podcast, this isn't the best way to position it. But for those of you at home, I'm going to ask you to do something. If you know the x-axis and the y-axis, if you draw a line on a piece of paper and you just draw it side to side, that would be your x-axis and you'd write coaching on it, right? And on your y-axis, you draw up, down. You'd write mentoring on it. Then if you do a typical four quadrants and cut that into four boxes, Bamos will do this while we're here, then what you'll have is you'll have four quadrants with two axes, like I mentioned, the X being coaching and the Y being mentoring.
X is this one, horizontal?
Yeah, horizontal. What I've often done, as I mentioned earlier, is that I'll often use these quadrants to have a better understanding of what state I'm in when I'm working with someone. So Bambos, for those who are watching, that's what it would look like. If you're at home listening on a podcast, you'll have to either imagine this in your head or draw it. But if you look at the x-axis coaching, then the beginning of that axis would be the lightest form of coaching would be making suggestions. You'd say, how about trying this? What do you think about adding this to your cycle? So that would be the lightest, form of coaching. The quintessential coaching is about inquiry. So the furthest length, so if you start off in these little suggestions, the furthest end of coaching would be inquiry, which is purely the questions like you saw me asking to Bambos, which are just reflective of his answers and supporting him to deepen his own thinking. So if we look now at the y-axis now instead of the x, we look at the mentoring and we start at the lowest point of mentoring, it would be instruct. The highest point of it would be principles. So now what we've created is we created an xy-axis with two functioning variables and a measurement scale, scale being the two going on either of these two factors of coaching or mentoring. So now it gets interesting because as we love the four quadrants, we now get to fill in the four quadrants. What is it that we know of somebody, okay, how would we describe the behavior of somebody who asks a lot of questions, okay, yeah, and they're instructing?
So did
you get it done? When is it going to be done?
Yeah.
How is it going to be done? What would we describe? How would we describe that behavior?
Bossy.
Yeah, okay. Or the word would be often managing. So now you're managing that person because your questions are guiding them. So what would we then call someone who has a lot of principles and they're making a lot of suggestions? What would that behavior be? So they're telling with suggestions. Do this, do that. That would be a teaching behavior. So if someone is high on the mentoring scale, low on the coaching scale, they'd be teaching. If someone was high on the coaching scale and low on the mentoring, they would be managing.
Okay.
So what is somebody who instructs and suggests? What would we?
My mother?
We would call that instructing. That would be somebody, for instance, who works at a fitness center.
Oh, yeah.
And then what do we call someone who has a high degree of principles, right? And they work from inquiry.
Coaching?
You could call coaching. I would call that leading.
Ah, bravo.
Because what you're doing then is you have a principle understanding that they themselves, when they come up with the answer for themselves, they can embody it. So that's what I would call it leading.
Surrendered leadership, almost.
Yeah, you might call it surrendered leadership. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that a leader doesn't behave in all four of these quadrants, because people, we behave in all four of these quadrants. And I guess the reason why this model was so important for me was because Case, my mentor, he almost 100% of his time was in a leading quadrant.
Yeah?
Yeah, he didn't teach very much. And I would say he spent 80% of his time here and maybe 10, 10 and that stuff. I spend about 80% of my time teaching and then I'll follow into the leading. Like that's sort of my two, where I spend a lot of my time. So we all spend different time in different areas. And I don't say one is better than the other. I say that's just where we show up. And it's one of the models I've used quite a bit in my life. So Bambos, we're all on our own journey. And there's times when we can share that journey with others. As soon as we think you can give me the thing I can't give myself, we start to lose agency over ourselves.
Yeah.
So I want everyone that I work with to feel empowered that they've already got the ability to begin to define their lives, but with some support of a group and some guidance here and there that will come further than if I give you the belief that you'll be able to achieve something because I tell you that I can solve that for you. I guarantee you if you went at the end of 95% of the courses that people take and said, was the expectations that you would have wanted to have achieved met? If you said the day after the course, they would say yes, because they're, or the day of the course, because they still have their adrenal glands, everything is pumping, oxytocin. A week later, you say, hey, what's fundamentally shifted in your life? There probably would be not as much.
Yeah.
And they'd have to go back to the well of training over and over again.
At least for me, a long-lasting effect has been until now that I don't have an issue with anger or violence.
Yeah.
There's like a complete peacefulness. It used to be something that used to worry me. Oh, shit, I'm angry again.
Yeah, that was your big Achilles heel in life.
So because I've embraced it, it doesn't come up explosively anymore.
Yeah. But I mean, if I, before that course, I'd said, hey, Bambos, we're going to solve that for you. First of all, we didn't know that was going to be the issue that was going to be most critical to solve. All we could do was let it emerge and create a group where that space could be held. And if everyone went into life and just said, we're going to hold space for what emerges, what a beautiful place this would be.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful chaos. We like it that way.